Welcome to Mom in Mind. I'm perinatal psychologist and host Dr. Kat. There's more to the story than just postpartum depression, and this podcast aims to share it all, from personal stories and lived experience to experts who break down the ups and downs of life from getting pregnant, pregnancy, perinatal loss, and postpartum adjustment to parenthood. While this is not psychotherapy or medical advice, it is all of the stuff you ever wanted to know about mental health and new parenthood.
Hi, and welcome to the Mom in Mind podcast. I'm your host, perinatal psychologist, Dr. Kat. We have another great episode for you with our guest, Dr. Ellen Chance. She's coming on to share her experience of postpartum anxiety and postpartum OCD, and also the amount of shame that she experienced that ultimately prevented her from sharing her experience with people that she loves and getting the help and support that she deserved. She talks about what that experience was like, as well as what it was like to come out of that shame experience and begin to seek healing. Dr. Ellen Chance is a counselor, educator, and founder of Whole Counseling and Wellness, a mental health private practice based in Florida. After her experience through perinatal mental health disorders, she received advanced training in perinatal mental health and is now serving the perinatal population. I'm grateful that she is on sharing her story, especially as somebody who's in the helping profession. Just going through mental health challenges can be additionally complex because as a helper, we often feel like we are not ones who should be seeking help. And I think it's an important message for all of us to remember, whether you're in the helping profession or not, you always deserve to get the help that you need. All right, let's hear from Ellen. Welcome, Ellen. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you. Thank you for having me, Kat.
I'm happy for you to share your story, which sounds like a weird thing to say, but that's what we do here, share stories and deepen understanding. And I think in particular, and as it relates to anxiety and OCD, people still have a lot of questions about what that is and how it impacts people and even have a hard time recognizing it in themselves. So stories like yours are really important to share so that other people know what to look for and also, you know, how to seek help. So I'm happy for you to start wherever you'd like.
Okay. Well, yeah, thank you. I agree. I think it's something that I've been much more vocal about in recent years, something that I carried. Well, I say carried. I mean, I certainly carried it alone for quite some time. And I know we talked a little bit about like how shame is at the root of that. So I think maybe I'll start there. It's just, you know, how shame can really drive the symptoms of anxiety and OCD, certainly can perpetuate it. And it can keep you in a place of isolation because, you know, you share some of the thoughts you're experiencing, you share some of the irrationality behind those thoughts and honestly feeling horrified by the thoughts that you're having. And, you know, I think for me, but for many people that I've worked with, it's, well, if I share this, how am I going to be perceived? How are people going to handle that information? And how are they truly going to help, I think, is another piece, right? Like, what are they going to be able to do to support me? So I am, when I had my daughter, she will be 7 soon. And I've shared previously that it was not what I expected motherhood was going to look like. There were definitely signs that I was struggling during pregnancy, you know, just being really preoccupied, really concerned that something was going to go wrong the entire pregnancy, even though there was no indication of that. Everything was going really well. I was very healthy, as was she. But I remember even early on, you know, Googling miscarriage rate and then feeling like, okay, I've gotten past that threshold where the rates are relatively low now. And then I moved on to the next thing to worry about, you know, so it was almost like, well, once I get to this threshold, I'll be okay. Right. I just have to get past that 12-week mark or have to get past, trying to think of another example, the strep B test. And I remember, you know, those apps that we all, you know, subscribe to and consume that, you know, oh, your baby's an avocado or your baby's a mango. What started off as something I was using because it was very exciting and informative actually became something I was engaging in to try to alleviate fear, try to feel informed. And it just made me fearful of so many things I didn't have to be fearful for. So for example, in those apps, right, like there are breakdowns of like what you can expect at your next OB appointment. And unfortunately, they list things that you could expect that could go wrong, right? And
that's where my mind went. I latched on to that. I remember, you know, during pregnancy, really getting fixated on certain milestones. And once I got to that milestone, this is what I could be told is going to happen to her. So even like the anatomy scan. Yes. So there was signs of that in pregnancy that I just kind of chalked up to, well, I just don't want anything bad to happen, right? Every mother would experience this. I didn't necessarily perceive it as abnormal or unhealthy or not serving me well. I was like, oh, this just must be what it's like to have your first baby. And then it then latched on to delivery. And I was convinced that something terrible was going to happen in delivery. My mind was taking me all different places. What could go wrong and what would happen to her?
This is like all the last trimester, or was it?
Yes. Uh-huh. Yes. I mean, it was definitely, I remember vividly just like ruminating over it and, you know, having a good shower cry here and there, thinking like, I wish I could just stop this thinking, right? And I ended up begging my OB to give me a C-section. And it was because I was so convinced something was going to go wrong. And if we could control the environment, right, that everything would be okay. And I've had, you know, knee surgery in the past. I'm like, surgery seems safe, right? Like, what could go wrong? Which is so not accurate. But that's what my mind was telling me. And so my OB said, absolutely not. You're going to, you know, there's no reason for you to have a C-section. You're going to have a, you know, wonderful birth. And I did. It was long, but it went well. And she was healthy and happy and, you know, thriving. And I think the next stage was, okay, now she's here. And we had a lot of feeding issues. So she was having a lot of trouble with latching. Just breastfeeding was a real struggle. I was working with lactation consultants. I was, you know, consistently going to the pediatrician and being told she's not gaining weight, you're going to need to supplement. And for some reason, I mean, I think we know that in our culture, obviously breastfeeding is promoted for many reasons that are completely valid. But I never had anyone tell me this doesn't have to be the case if it's a detriment to your well-being, right? Yeah. And I did it. Like in this period, I did not hear that. You know, I did hear from the pediatrician, like, we'll supplement while she's figuring out. But looking back, I remember being at those pediatrician appointments and clearly not being well, right? Like very, very easy to cry, very fearful, asking so many questions that, you know, in hindsight, I'm like, gosh, you would have thought maybe they would have checked in on me.
Oh, so no.
Right?
Questions, no screening tools, nothing like that.
Right. And so, you know, I think that experience there, I put a ton of pressure on myself. I was even feeling like, oh, well, I have to supplement. That means I'm inadequate. This is, you know, I'm not doing what I should be doing as a mother. I should be able to do this and make this work. The women around me who I'd seen as models, as mothers, they just made breastfeeding look so easy. I definitely felt a lot of inadequacy because of that. Not to mention she was up like every hour eating, which, you know, like there's that too. So, you know, there were a few things that I look back at now and say, okay, you know, risk factor for experiencing the exacerbation of symptoms that I did in postpartum. And the OCD truly became all-consuming at that point. I would say it was really around the probably 4 to 5 week mark. I think for sure there was a lot of it occurring during pregnancy. I just didn't regard it as that. So yeah, I would say around the 4 or 5 week mark, it really became all-consuming. It was like, I always call it like the recorder you just can't turn off, right? It just keeps going. That's how it felt. A recorder in my brain that I could not stop. And I didn't really open up to anyone about it. You know, I had opened up to my sister and my mom and my best friends, my sister-in-law. I had shared with them just, this is hard. You know, many of them saw me struggling, but I was never transparent about here's where my mind is taking me.
Okay.
Hey, are you a parent of a teenager? Are you feeling overwhelmed about how to be what they need while also holding limits and boundaries that keep them safe? Are you tired of conversations that negate how messy this season of parenting is? Well, I've got you. My name is Casey O'Rourke. I am a positive discipline trainer, parent coach, and the host of the Joyful Courage podcast. Every week, I come to you with an interview, digging into tough topics with experts I trust and solo shows that go deep into the personal growth and mindset needed to raise teens in a way that grows them into confident, capable young people. I am not afraid of getting real about the intersection of conscious parenting and the teen years, while also bringing in vulnerability, humor, and lightness. I'm walking the path with you and honored to serve. Listen to Joyful Courage on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you consume podcasts.
Lynn, this time of year, parenting can be such a flusterclux.
You've come to the right place. I'm Lynn Lyons, and I've been treating anxious families for over 30 years.
I'm Lynn's sister-in-law and co-host Robin Hudson.
Join us for Flusterclux, a podcast for parents who worry.
Wait, that's everybody.
Yeah, these last few years have felt like one long anxiety attack for so many.
Why do you think parents are always surprised that a podcast about anxiety relates to them, even if no one in their house has an anxiety disorder?
Well, worry is human. Everyone does it. And anxiety shows up when we face uncertainty.
All the parenting tips you've taught me have been essential.
I love to break it down into skills we need to manage worry in our families.
We've covered so many topics. Depression, burnout, meltdowns, perfectionism.
Don't forget scary mothers-in-law.
Right, but of course that's not my mother-in-law.
Because that's my mother.
And a listener.
As a psychotherapist, I like to teach parents and kids how to respond to everyday moments in healthy ways.
Managing anxiety really can be taught.
It really can, and I'll even tell you what to say.
We talk about serious stuff, but without being too serious.
Anxiety wants everything serious. Anxiety doesn't stand a chance when we're laughing, even about the tough stuff.
Was that transparent enough to them that they mentioned any concern for you or checked in on you? I'm just thinking of, you know, what it looked like on the outside to other people sometimes does not match what it feels like on the inside to us.
Yeah. I think that I was pretty good at concealing it. In the sense, I think there were a few moments in that period where the walls really came down. So for example, I remember vividly being in a Barnes & Noble with my mom at the little Starbucks they have in the Barnes & Noble. And, you know, I think we had gotten a coffee and sat down and I just broke down crying. And I think that that was one of the moments where I was like, I'm really struggling. And I shared with her, I'm scared, you know. But again, I wish now I would have opened up about the thoughts, because the thoughts were what I couldn't turn off, right? I opened up about like, oh, this is hard and I'm feeling down and I'm feeling alone. I feel like I'm inadequate. But as far as the OCD, I was almost very intentionally concealing that. I think, yeah, if I'm being honest, I think I was too concerned about how I would be perceived if I was completely honest about my symptoms.
Are you talking about intrusive thoughts specifically, or were there other types of things that became obsessive?
Yeah, so a lot of intrusive thinking. I was, just as in pregnancy, I was concerned that something was going to happen to her. That's completely what my OCD latched onto. I was so worried about her getting sick, excessive hand washing, lots of rumination on things that could happen to her. You know, there was a Today Show story that in the midst of all of this that was broadcast about a family who lost their baby because a family member kissed the baby and the baby contracted herpes. And that just really sent me on a tailspin. I was convinced. And that was one of the questions that I was asking the pediatrician at the time. I remember saying, if she contracted herpes, what's the, you know, incubation period? When would I know? I was like prepping for something that could happen.
Really, really do. Even would maybe raise some concerns for people in
anxiety
and OCD on board. It just like absorbs it almost automatically.
Well, yeah, exactly. And it tricks you to believe like this is something that you have to spend this much time worrying about, right? And preventing. Yeah. So excessive cleaning, fear of contamination. And then it also latched on to sexual abuse. I was watching an SVU, Law and Order SVU. Again, this is like I'm consuming something, right? In the media, and my fear latches onto it. And so, you know, it was an instance of a child being sexually abused in the episode on SVU. And it really, again, just consumed me that this is something that could happen to her. Meanwhile, you know, she's 4 weeks old, right? In my immediate care at all times, and clearly not a present concern or something that was happening. It was just my mind was like, this could, how could you prevent this? You know, who could do this? And these intrusive thoughts feel so, I want to say like violating, right? Like it's like, that's pretty much, you know, how it showed up for me in postpartum. And certainly, you know, I think the hard part was that I'm a professional in the field of mental health. At the time, earning my PhD. And I think perhaps that's part of why there was so much shame. And there was also so much effort to conceal, in the sense of like, well, you know, I should know how to fix this. I should know how to address this. And I certainly can't open up to people about this, is essentially where I was mentally. And it's so contradictory to, I mean, our training as professionals, right? We know that we can't treat ourselves. We know that we should seek help if we need help. But we work day in and day out to reduce shame and stigma. But yet here I am living it, and it became so relatable to why so many people I had worked with, right? Like it was very eye-opening that this certainly doesn't discriminate, doesn't matter your education, background, training, knowledge of mental health. It really doesn't. It can impact anybody. And that was not something I was anticipating.
It does come as a shock, and I definitely identify with that sentiment of not feeling like you can know, but feeling like you're the professional, so you should know, and you have to figure it out or hide it. And that happens to a lot of people anyway. And then you add on these additional layers of whatever it is, your profession, professions can bring in all kinds of different stressors, depending on, you know, certainly like nurses could feel this, or, you know, other medical professionals or people in military, or like there's so many different ways that our jobs also add on this additional layer that you don't necessarily anticipate before you're going into it. Like, you don't think, you know, hey, I'm going to go into this and have to deal with some really intense mental health changes.
Yeah.
So surprise.
Yeah, it's absolutely a surprise. And that's such a good point about how just different, you know, different training and knowledge and background can also perpetuate that feeling of shame, right? It's like, oh, well, I'm a doctor, I'm a nurse, or, you know, I'm a professional in a helping field in particular, I think could drive a lot of people to isolate.
Right. I mean, it kind of shuts you up or shuts you down into feeling that shame that you were talking about. And it's really powerful. It's very silencing. So like for you, what were the things you would tell yourself? I guess, I don't know if that's the right way to ask it for you, but like what was the internal process? Like if you felt like telling somebody about it, what happened after that?
Yeah. So I think the first thing that would come to mind that would kind of hinder me or stop me from opening up was just probably honestly fear of judgment, fear that I wasn't going to be met with understanding, especially because so much of what I was thinking was horrifying. And I was able to logically reason that this is not happening right now, right? This is not something I have to worry about. But yet, like I said, that recorder I couldn't turn it off. So it was like, well, logically, I know that what I'm doing is anxiety, right? It's grounded in anxiety. It's grounded in intrusive thinking, and it's becoming obsessional. It's leading to compulsive behavior. Like I was able to recognize all of that.
Oh, wow. That's great.
But yeah. But in the way of like, I can't stop it, even though I know what this is. So I was like, well, if I open up about these horrifying intrusive thoughts and this experience, I'm not going to be met with understanding, and people are going to perceive me as like I'm losing my mind, right? Like the idea that I would say to somebody, I'm worried about my daughter being sexually abused. I think about it all the time. I have visuals of it that are horrifying, right? Like my mind feels like it's playing tricks on me. Yes, it was really, who's going to get it? Who's going to understand? And if I tell the people I love, they're going to be really concerned about me.
Right. Is some part of that that you don't want people to be concerned about you?
Probably.
I ask that because there's this really interesting, I don't know what the right word is, but like the flip side of the coin where that feeling of just being so overwhelmed by what you're feeling. Mm-hmm. And I guess just to put it in broad terms, to not want to like burden anybody or it doesn't always feel like burden, but it, just for lack of a better word for right now, it's like the push and pull of needing that help and also not wanting to need that help.
It does. And you're spot on with that, right? Again, which could possibly tie back to some of the work that we do in the mental health field. It's like, you know, we carry a lot. We hold space. And what I've seen is, you know, not very often do we ask others to hold space for us. And so especially for me, that feels a bit foreign in that time. I mean, much more so now. I'm much more open. I've learned a lot since then in the last 7 years, but the version of me that was so vulnerable in that postpartum period, certainly, I don't think burden is how I felt. I just didn't want people to be concerned about my well-being and my mental state, like being unstable or, yeah.
For them to think it was worse than it was or that...
Or honestly, how bad it actually was. Yeah. I mean, it was never the situation where, and I think that I hear this from so many women, right? It was never in a situation where I wanted to harm my baby, harm myself, had intrusive thoughts about harming myself or harming my baby. And so I felt like because it's not those two things, should I even worry anyone over this? Should I just figure this out on my own? Right. That was part of it. And then, of course, like, you know, we're all human. It's like the perception of others was certainly a factor as well.
Yeah, it's tough. I don't know, too. I think maybe this is true for therapists more often than I'm not sure. But because we are also help givers, sometimes I've heard this when the people we care about, even when they're worried about us, we try and hold space for them to be juggling all of this and still trying to come to terms with how you're doing yourself and then mm-hmm. to have this awareness that somebody you care about is worried about you and like the level to which our need to care for things just expands.
Right. That's very true.
It's overwhelming.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. And it was interesting because at one point I felt like, is anyone truly like seeing me? And years ago, like I want to say maybe 2 or 3 years ago, my sister-in-law had a baby 6 weeks prior to me. And we were kind of, you know, just talking about that period and what life was like for us. And she was somebody who was very influential in me coping. But she said, I wasn't sure I was going to get my sister back. And when she said that, I was really actually taken aback because I didn't realize that from someone else's perspective, I was struggling that much, right? Like I knew it internally, but I because I was like trying to conceal it and, you know, be intentional of like, I'm carrying this alone. I was taken aback. She's like, yeah, I wasn't sure if I would ever get my sister, my best friend back. And it was shocking, honestly. I said to her, I was like, wow, like you really saw me as different. She said, oh yeah, you had completely changed, just running on high anxiety. And
wow, huh, that's interesting, right? So maybe we think we're hiding it better than we are.
maybe so.
It's hard to hold that. I mean, there's that's really, really tough,
you know.
So okay, so some people around you had a sense that something wasn't quite right, but it sounds like nobody knew for a little while, at least.
Right.
What was the kind of process for you of you, I guess, come realizing what was going on and or beginning to share it with other people?
So I think when the, I always call it when the fog began to clear, you know, I think things gradually started to improve. My daughter, you know, the feeding was going much better. And that meant she was sleeping much better. And that meant the feelings of inadequacy were decreasing. And I began to feel more confident in myself as a mother. I began to, you know, return to work, which I think was very good for me. I think it gave my mind like something intellectually to focus on other than be in this preoccupation. So that was a very healthy transition for me in many senses. So I felt like once I started to recognize myself again, I was much more willing to open up to people about the fact that that was the hardest 3 to 6 months of my life. But honestly, it really wasn't even until, you know, starting to work as a volunteer for Postpartum Support International and leading support groups that I became much more willing to be transparent, open, vulnerable about the degree to what to which I experienced postpartum OCD.
Right. Right. Yeah. It does take some time for sure. Mm-hmm. And none of that everybody has to share their stories. Certainly don't have.
No.
Yeah. That process of going from kind of hiding it to being more open about it. It, you know, for me anyways, like I had to kind of two things, kind of see how I felt, see how other people were responding, even if I knew they were like caring, loving.
Right.
There's such vulnerability in sharing.
Yeah. And that's probably pretty indicative of like, you want to be able to gauge how people are going to respond and what their perception is going to be of the information you're giving them. Right. And that's what feels like the element that holds you back, at least for me, that's very much how it felt. Right. But yeah, I mean, once you realize, oh, you're met with compassion and you're met with empathy, and there's also other people who can relate to your experience, that is single-handedly the most healing part, I think. It's like, this wasn't just me.
Right. That's pretty huge.
Well, hey there, busy mama. Are you looking for ways to make your life easier, your home less chaotic, and at the same time, add more joy to your life? My name is Deanna Yates, and I'm the host of Wanna Be Clutter-Free, a podcast all about letting go of the stuff we don't need in our lives so that we can focus on what truly matters. Don't worry, I'm not going to tell you to throw it all away or make you feel guilty about keeping something you love, no matter how many other people don't quite understand it. But I will give you practical and, more importantly, actionable advice so that you can make progress right away. And you won't just hear it from me. There are amazing guests, too. It's like having your bestie in your pocket, telling you it's okay to let go of the things that are not serving you and your family in a totally non-judgmental way. So join me over on the podcast where we can work on progress over perfection for those of us that want to be clutter-free.
Hi there, I'm Andrea Owen, self-help author with 19 translations of my books, global keynote speaker, and life coach. My podcast, Make Some Noise, has been serving up self-help in a simple-to-digest way for the last decade. The topics brought in each episode are practical and easy to implement around topics such as working through fears that keep you stuck, different modalities of therapy, managing your negative self-talk, and more. We bring you guest experts, solo episodes, and I even coach listeners on the air around relatable struggles. I also do my best to weave my sense of humor into some heavy topics because, let's face it, life can be pretty hard, and it's so much better when we can have some fun while walking through our challenges. Whether you're seasoned in personal development or just starting out, Make Some Noise podcast will help you become the best version of yourself, the person you're proud of when you look in the mirror and show up in your life. Simply search Make Some Noise with Andrea Owen wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Was there something for you that drew you to start volunteering? Like, did you know for sure what was going on for you was postpartum OCD? Or, yeah, what was that process that drew you to the work?
Oh, I definitely, you know, even as I was experiencing it, I was able to say to myself, I know what this is. And I, you know, obviously that was just because of my background. To that point, though, I, you know, at that time had essentially 8 years of education towards this degree in mental health. And we really don't learn about perinatal mood and anxiety disorders to the degree that you would need to in order to treat this population and serve this population. And so there was so much I did not know. So for example, yes, I knew what I was experiencing was OCD because I was able to identify I'm having obsessional thoughts. Those obsessional thoughts are leading to compulsive behaviors. But I didn't know that obsessional thoughts about sexual abuse is actually incredibly common in perinatal OCD. Incredibly common. And so that to me was normalizing. I was like, okay, this wasn't just something that's wrong with me, right? And so I slowly began to learn more because of my experience. I also realized how underserved this population is and also how little, in at least in my area, how little access there was to trained professionals. So when I went to have my son, I was trying to be proactive and wanted to take a completely different approach to pregnancy and postpartum by seeking help. And there was really nobody in the area that was trained. And so that was very much the reason why I said, this is something I feel called to do. And it really started with just volunteering with PSI and being a peer supporter and then kind of going from there and professionally now being in this community of serving the perinatal population.
Yeah. So in throughout your journey, what were the things that you found were helpful for you?
So I think with what I know now and the ability to look back on the experience, I did recognize that sleep was hands down one of the number one factors, I think, that made my symptoms worse, but also better. And so as soon as we, you know, my partner and I, we kind of found, even though she was still waking a lot, we found a better system of we're not both up at the same time, creating opportunities for protected sleep where, you know, at least I was getting a 3 hour, maybe 4 hour stretch of sleep versus every 1 to 2 hours. That was a huge game changer. And so that is certainly something I think we need to prioritize and educate people on, right? It's like, yeah, you're sleep deprived and part of that's unavoidable, but we can put practical supports in place for the individuals who are caring for the baby to have protected sleep. That was a huge one. I think too, a lot of mindfulness-based activities were helpful. So things that brought me back to the here and now. And that certainly wasn't consuming media. That certainly wasn't consuming social media. That was more so reading a book or cooking or going out for a walk and being in nature, being outside, engaging with my baby, right? Being fully present with her and playing. So those types of moments were really helpful in taking me away from the rumination, taking me away from, you know, giving merit to the intrusive thoughts. It's not that they weren't occurring. It was more so that I wasn't going down the rabbit hole of giving them my attention. So that was helpful. I also think finding some sense of normalcy again, right? I think a lot of what I was doing was isolating. I was really scared to even like take her out because of fear of contamination, her getting sick. And so I was cooped up. As soon as I started making her more a part of my life, versus feeling like I had to completely isolate and attend to her 24/7, I started to improve, right? Like getting out and being with friends and going and doing things with her, getting her around to other people. I began to realize everything I'm fearing is not as big of a fear as I'm making it out to be, right? She can go around others and not come home and, you know, spike a fever. So exposing myself to the things that actually made me fearful was certainly helpful. And then as I said, I think going back to work for me, it helped me have a sense of identity again.
Those are super important. It is so easy to get kind of lost in your thoughts or thought processes and worries, it's such internal, like feeling consumed by all of this stuff. Yeah, you really do need those touch points that are outside, like outside of you, outside of your head, so to speak, process to be tapped into what is really happening right now, as opposed to what you're worried about is happening or could happen. Those points are really powerful. And I appreciate that you're, you know, talking about sleep because, yeah, for sure, we know that it is a massive part of this and that there are ways that you can negotiate with your partner or family or whoever is involved in how to get that sleep. Mm-hmm. But these are the things that you're describing are, you don't need $1 million or, you know, like a huge amount of money to do some of these things. And that's really what's needed for people to have accessible and easy to do things that don't require a ton of.
Yeah. So I do feel so much of coping through any perinatal mood and anxiety disorder is just like the practical things that day to day can make individuals feel better. And I think you also tapped into something. It's engaging your support system and making them a part of healing, right? Whether that's healing through sleep or time to self or those things.
Well, I thank you so much for sharing your story. People need to know what this looks like and feels like and sounds like so that they can recognize it within themselves. And it's just really important that you're sharing your story because, yes, especially because OCD is still not understood as well as it should be just by the general population. It's like clear that you didn't want to feel any of this. You were doing the best that you could do under really difficult circumstances and that you needed the help and support that everybody deserves. So thank you for sharing today.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Thank you again, Ellen, for sharing your story. It is imperative that we continue to hear stories like this. So anyone out there knows what it sounds like, what it feels like, and what to look for when they are struggling through a perinatal mental health disorder, and how to find healing, how to seek healing, and to know that that is even possible. So important, and it's so empowering to have this information. If you'd like to get connected with Ellen, go to Instagram at Dr. Ellen Chance or at Whole Counseling. And as usual, please follow along to the Mom and Mind podcast wherever you listen to podcasts and on our social media at Mom and Mind. I am grateful that you took the time to listen today and would also be grateful if you passed this along to somebody who could use this support. Thank you so much. Until next time.
Please find the Mom and Mind podcast on momandmind.com or wellmindperinatal.com, where you can also find access to my free online mini course that is specifically designed for people experiencing anxiety in the postpartum period. Or you can learn more about the 3.5-hour self-paced course that I created just for managing postpartum stress. You can also connect with us on social media at Mom and Mind on Instagram and Facebook. Thank you for tuning in and learning more about perinatal mental health.
I'm Margaret.
And I'm Amy.
And together we host the podcast, What Fresh Hell? Laughing in the Face of Motherhood.
Margaret, I would say you're sort of a where are my keys kind of mom.
Correct. Sometimes a where are my kids kind of mom. Well, you're, Amy, more of a we were supposed to leave 35 seconds ago, mom.
I mean, touche. In each episode of What Fresh Hell, we come at a topic from our usually completely opposite perspectives. I bring the research.
And I bring kind of the gimlet eye. Like, is that research really going to work, people?
And almost 10 million downloads later, we're still laughing.
We also talk to experts in the parenting field, plus parents with stories we can all learn from.
We make each other laugh, we challenge each other's assumptions, and we have what we think is the best parenting community on the internet.
Check out What Fresh Hell, Laughing in the Face of Motherhood, wherever you listen to podcasts.